In a collaboration devised to meet the challenges posed by the global health pandemic, the 2020 Williamstown Theater Festival season is the first ever complete theater season released by Audible, the world's largest producer and provider of original spoken word entertainment and audiobooks. The WTF season on Audible is being produced in an audio-only format safe to elevate, entertain, and transform audiences from the comfort of their homes. Yes, the season is different, but it is being made with the spirit of invention that has long been a hallmark of the festival. To tell us more all about it and about all the other cool stuff that goes along with this, we welcome Mandy Greenfield, our dear friend, artistic director of the Williamstown Theater Festival. How are you?
I'm hearing your voice, so I'm wonderful.
Excellent. Well, that's very kind of you to say. It's really good to hear your voice, and I thank you very much for being with us. I know you've been incredibly busy doing all of these projects, and I mean, would a festival just have been easier?
Yeah, you know, we don't often embrace ease. It's just not in the DNA of this festival, I'll tell you that much. It's not high on our list of priorities. You know, there is something so indelible about, you know, spending 9 months of any year, you know, preparing to kind of shoot out of a cannon into the world, right? Yeah. And that pent-up energy just could not be stopped by this global health pandemic. We still really wanted the voice of these playwrights, the power of these actors, the vision of directors to somehow be translated into an artistically excellent and culturally impactful body of work. And the desire to do that on the part of the artists was there. So here we are making it, and we look forward to shooting out of the cannon, you know, later this year, you know, perhaps a few months behind where we had hoped to be, you know, in the summer, obviously, which is our you know, normal fare. But make art we will, and we're doing it.
So my understanding is you have 4 recorded already. Is that right?
That's right. So, really interestingly, Joe, you know, and I'm sure there's an equivalent in your world, in everyone's business, right? This global health pandemic, you know, reveals itself, the magnitude of it, the horror of it. And everyone is, you know, guessing about what tomorrow brings, what 6 weeks down the road brings, you know, what will the world look like at any point in the future before us. So when we put together the collaboration with Audible, and this is really, you know, in late March, early April, right? This is at the very beginning. We had this idea that perhaps by summer, while it seemed obvious it would not be safe to bring audiences together at the 62 Center for Theater and Dance, as it turned out not to be, we guessed it might be safe to bring artists together into one room to make these recordings together. And that was actually a bad guess. It turned out that actually once we got to summer, while obviously some conditions had changed and certainly in Massachusetts and New York improved, it still was not the case that it was either easy or achievable or in some cases legal. You know, the way that New York State released its guidelines for the phasing, there actually was not a distinction made between entertainment with a live audience versus entertainment without a live audience. So, in fact, we could not put artists together in a room as we'd hoped to. We had to pivot yet again. So of the 7 shows that we are making, of the entire season of 7 shows, we have made 4. But the pivot was then to both rehearsing and recording by way of technology so that writers, directors, actors, the Williamstown Theater Festival team, the Audible team, was all working from the safety of their home. Audible, thank goodness, has this remarkable technology where they sent recording computers and kits to all of our artists. Our artists were connected by video so they could see each other and act together. and have, you know, a kind of digital artistic experience where they are acting face to face, but via the Audible technology recorded individually. And so, of course, you know, getting those kits out, making sure that everyone's set up to succeed, working with the Audible engineers, pulling all of this intense technology together took a little bit longer, involved a little bit more intense logistics coordination. So we are 4 of 7 in the can, if you will, to borrow a term from our friends in film and television, and really looking forward to doing the next 3 together.
So do you want them all done before you release them to the world? Is that the idea?
You know, we are still in process on that. The, again, original idea before we knew exactly how the world would unfold was, you know, vaguely that, yes. But to be frank, you know, I think at this point what we're looking forward to is pushing the work out, you know, whether it's simultaneously or sequentially. I'm sort of giving myself, And I think all of, you know, our staff and board and the Audible team is kind of giving ourselves over to the universe. We will be complete in the next couple of months, and then we'll see what makes the most sense given where we are in the post-production phase. Because, you know, once it's been recorded, it then gets woven together by engineers and our sound designers, and with the input of the Audible team and our directors in a, you know, process that is really closer to making a movie than making theater, right? So there's lots of work to do, but it's all getting done. And I feel confident that whether it's sequentially or simultaneously, our audiences who've been so patient and loyal will get to hear the fruits of these labors toward the end of the year.
So I have a gazillion follow-up questions. I'll limit it to 3, beginning with, can you make money off this?
The Williamstown Theater Festival did not do this to make money off of it, no. You know, when there, you know, if you can sort of remember back to the moments, you know, in late March, early April, when it was a just avalanche of postponements and cancellations, you know, it was in a dark night of the soul where this idea came to me. And I must admit that the idea came to me, you know, largely to, you know, help sort of see and define a North Star toward which we and our artists could work and our audiences could hope, but also to keep artists working and compensated for working. And that was really a kind of large driver of us putting this together with Audible. And as a result, I must admit, our institutional needs have really taken a backseat to our artists' needs. And so we're making art to launch it into the universe, and we want to take, you know, a victory lap for the genius of the stories, the storytellers, and the artists who are helping us tell these stories. And it's Audible's business model that, you know, is really supporting all of this. So it is not for us a financial gain. I suspect in my soul that because of the beauty of what we're making, so many of our most loyal donors and perhaps even some new friends will find it in their hearts and bank accounts to continue to support us philanthropically. Because like so many other arts organizations, we really did, you know, let go of our revenue in having to cancel our season. Ticket revenue goes to zero this year. So art will be made, artists will be compensated, and we will rely on the extraordinary generosity and vision of donors to sustain us through what is undeniably one of the darkest periods in American and, you know, global cultural history that we will know.
Right. Absolutely. So if I want to, when it is complete, and I want to see and I want to hear one of these productions, which, let's say, Photograph 51, and I want to hear that, I have an Audible account. Do I pay for that?
That is an excellent question, Joe, to which I don't have the answer, as I am not in charge of the Audible business model.
Okay.
But when we know those details, they will be released with such beauty and precision that you will know exactly what to do. And if you have any questions, please call me directly, because then I'll know too.
Well, I was just curious. I mean, if you have however many tickets you can sell in a 2-week period of time at the festival versus an entire world that you can put out to, that if you're making, say, $10 a download, then you do stand to make some money.
Yes, Audible has an extraordinary business model and global reach. I mean, that is one of the sort of, you know, intangible wins for the Williamstown Theater Festival, while, you know, our coffers will not be filled by the global audience that is so dazzled by the notion of listening to Audra McDonald and Carla Gugino act Streetcar Named Desire. Those folks will suddenly be aware of the Williamstown Theater Festival and the work that we make and the boldness with which we make it in ways that without this transaction, they would not be. So whether they wind up, you know, coming to the Northern Berkshires next summer or at whatever period in time, it's safe to travel and stay in a hotel and see plays and go to art museums and, you know, eat in the restaurants, or they, you know, somehow find a way to support us and the region in other ways, I think our sort of global platform has really been amplified and will be through the reach of Audible.
One of the things that in the timeline that you talked about just a moment ago, and I remember thinking at the time that you reached an agreement with them very quickly. I mean, that says a lot. That is really quite incredible. So you have the idea and then things get hammered out pretty quick.
You know, I have to say thank you for your kind words. It was very fast. It was very intense. It's a real testament to Audible Theatrical's commitment to theater artists. You know, they have a theater division. I think that they saw very instantly the value of this unbelievable group of artists in Robert O'Hara and Anna Ziegler and Susan Stroman and Audra McDonald, you know, and everyone, Stacey Ose Cooper and Whitney White and the Road Team. I mean, you know, I think that they were really turned on by the notion of supporting such a diverse and impactful group of artists. And I think they're committed in a way to theater artists that is profound. And Kate Navin, who heads Audible Theatrical Division, really didn't hesitate. When I made the call, I said, listen, I cannot let this group of artists and art perish. I want to make this with you as a theater season. It was almost no hesitation before a yes. It was almost an instantaneous collaboration and partnership. And it's really been a joy to make this with them.
Okay, so a couple of things in our moments left. One is just give us a thumbnail of the four productions that you have so far, and knowing that they're not out yet, but people can find out more information if they go to your website, which is wtfestival.org, and that is one of the first places that you can find and get updates on how things are going. But just talk about the four productions for a second.
So very happily. I will do them in the order in which we recorded them. The world premiere of Shekina Nafak's Chonburi International Hotel and Butterfly Club, directed by Laura Savia. Shekina Nafak is an extraordinary artist, activist. She is a writer. She is an actor. She's also featured in an upcoming NBC television show. This is a piece about a group of women recovering from gender assignment surgery, reassignment surgery in Thailand. And it is it kind of presents in some ways as a kind of old fashioned mid-century hotel comedy. But it really interrogates pieces of the human experience that are really bold and brave and new and unknown to audiences. And it's a wonderful piece that we're very excited to birth in this form. Photograph 51, which you mentioned, is Anna Ziegler's play, directed by Susan Stroman, featuring the remarkable Anna Chlumsky and an incredible group of other actors. This is a piece about a scientist named Rosalind Franklin, known to many as the person who unlocked a lot of the science and understanding of DNA and RNA, and yet who was overlooked by history and overshadowed by her male counterparts. And it's a piece that really looks at her contributions and her life and what held her back and also how to set her free into the universe. And it's a wonderful piece. We then made a play called Animals, by Stacey Osei-Kufour, directed by Whitney White, with an incredible cast. It's a play that, you know, at the time that I programmed it, I knew was powerful and provocative and funny and moving. It's about two interracial couples navigating some of the thornier aspects of, you know, what it means to be in a relationship with someone in the United States of America at this moment in time who comes from a very, very different cultural background than you do. And I think the degree to which it resonates newly and now is really powerful and provocative and funny and difficult and all the things that you want a play to be. Finally, Streetcar Named Desire. Mm-hmm. Tennessee Williams, you know, I will say, I don't think I need to say anything about the play, but I will say that Robert O'Hara, who directed last year's revival of A Raisin in the Sun by Lorraine Hansberry, is our director. The origins of this revival really came out of our work on Raisin in the Sun. You know, that was a bit of a radical and wonderful and extraordinary interpretation of the piece that audiences had not seen before. And Robert and I set about the task of finding another classic text that we could interrogate with the same sort of boldness and freshness together. And of course, you know, finding and bringing Audra McDonald and Carla Gugino to the roles of Blanche and Stella, respectively, with Robert's unbelievably smart and sensitive direction. While, you know, the audio, there's one existing recording of Streetcar Named Desire from the 1973 Lincoln Center production of the show. So it's really going to be, it's a little piece of history in some ways. Sure. And we're so grateful that the estate for Tennessee Williams got on board to let us do this and that we have Audra McDonald and Carla Gugino in these iconic roles, sort of revealing them to us anew. So those are the four in the can, three more to go, and I'll hope to talk to you again when we've got these next three done.
Well, that will be, I look forward to that. You know, I will ask my final question to you, coming from a guy who has made his life and his career in radio. This is fascinating to me because, yes, these would be performed on stage and there would be a visual aspect. The thing I have always loved about theater is the intimacy of it. I have always felt that radio is the most intimate form of media. So what for you as an artistic director were the challenges in saying, okay, we are taking that visual element away, but let's not lose anything. Let's only add to that equation.
I mean, a brilliant and the question, right? So I agree with you. Listening, the act of listening is incredibly intimate. And part of the idea to call audible came from my own behaviors in the earliest days of this pandemic when, Joe, I could not read, I could not watch television, I couldn't focus on anything that could distract me enough from kind of what was going on in the world, but I could listen. I was rabidly listening to podcasts and books on tape, and something about listening both allowed me to escape, but also demanded something of me imaginatively and cognitively. Mm. I had to bring something to the experience in order to release into it. And it was truly, you know, the night that I had this idea where I realized, that's not dissimilar from being in the theater. You can go to the theater and be a kind of passive recipient of it, but it's so much more exhilarating when you bring your own experience. That's what catharsis is on stage, right? That's what conflict is on stage. It's when we recognize ourselves and we are letting ourselves experience through process through our own minds and souls and hearts and bodies, the experience of the characters before us as they sort of hold the mirror up to life. So I think there's a kind of natural synergy, frankly, between audio and theater. Mm. Having said that, to your point, when you let go of the visual, what fills that space, particularly for projects that were conceived originally to incarnate in three dimensions? And I guess I would answer with two things. Number one, all of our living playwrights in this season, so of which there are six, have been actively, front-footedly involved in the process, and they have translated their plays from pieces that were conceived for the stage in three dimensions into plays that can be heard and experienced in an audio format. So, for example, where there were stage directions upon which we have to rely and they're ultimately, staging, the writers have actually changed their plays so that we can follow the story, understand the emotional impact of the characters through dialogue, or in some cases, sound, which brings me to my second point. You know, we did not approach, and we are not approaching, making these seven shows as, radio plays, if you will, right?
Right.
Kind of old-fashioned, Foley-driven, creaky door, sort of old, musty, dusty things that I think a lot of us associate with, the era of radio plays. We've been thinking about these projects as audio projects, as audio plays, as pod-based, front-footed, technologically innovative, sonically dynamic projects. Our sound designers from the theater are working with us to really engage the creative process so that the experience of hearing these plays feels tailored to the format in which we're making them. So hopefully, it's a very tall order, but some of the acts of translation will happen actually in the sound design and in the sound execution, the sound engineering of the pieces themselves, so that you have a fully satisfying experience. Whether that means you are able to visualize it, right? Because that's one possibility, that the listener can visualize what's happening, or you can just feel it, right? You can
right.
feel the conflict. You can feel the drama. It can reach you through the sonic experience. We hope to deliver. That's what we're doing.
It's so fascinating because I think of, you could say this about many playwrights, but if you just get somebody where the language is so beautiful, whether it be Tennessee Williams or Ibsen or O'Neill or Hansberry or Wilson, and you think about, I can tell you, almost every time there is a moment where I do, even in the theater, just shut my eyes to hear the language.
Yeah.
To bathe in that beautiful language. So to be given that opportunity, yes, not ideal and not the first choice, is really a gift too, which will be really fun, I think, to hear.
I look forward to fulfilling your hopes and dreams with the work.
As you always do. Mandy Greenfield is Artistic Director of the Williamstown Theater Festival. You can find out about all these very cool projects that will be coming to Audible by going to their website, and even help them out if you see fit. WTFestival.org, WTFestival.org. Mandy, it is always a great pleasure to speak with you. I wish you all the luck in the world as you continue on this beautiful project, and I thank you for sharing with us this morning.
Always wonderful to speak with you. Thank you so much, and I look forward to speaking with you and to listening to you again soon.
Thank you very much. Again, Mandy Greenfield is Artistic Director of the Williamstown Theater Festival, WTFestival.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.